Let's continue reading Genesis 39, verses 7 through 12. Now in these verses, we read of the attempt of Potiphar's wife to seduce Joseph, but Joseph resisted the temptation. Genesis 39, beginning at verse 7. Now it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. Once again, a few background notes. Joseph was brought down to Egypt by the Midianite traders and sold as a slave to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials. But the Lord was with Joseph, and he blessed him. And it wasn't long before Joseph was elevated to a position of overseer of Potiphar's whole estate. Verse 5 says that Joseph was over Potiphar's house and everything that Potiphar had. And we read that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. But trouble loomed on the horizon. Verse 6 says that Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and Potiphar's wife took notice. Again, verse 7. Now it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." This was probably not the first time that Potiphar's wife had tried something like this, and she probably had been successful with other men. Furthermore, because Joseph was one of Potiphar's slaves, she probably considered Joseph part of her property. She could do with him as she liked. But Joseph refused and resisted her temptations. Unlike Judah, unlike King David later, Joseph did not sin in this area. And look at verse 10. So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. Notice that this temptation was not a one-time event. Joseph doesn't assume that because this has happened a number of times, oh, it must be God's will. You know, some Christians operate like that. If something happens enough times in a row, oh, God must be speaking. What kind of reasoning is that anyway? Satan would love to have you think like that because he comes again and again with the same temptations. In verse 11, it looks like Potiphar's wife arranged a situation where no one would be in the house, and she grabbed Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But Joseph resisted and ran away, even though he had to leave his coat in her hands. Notice that Joseph didn't say, "Okay, you win. I've tried to resist, but since you're my boss, I better obey you." No way. Joseph knew that this was sin. Sin against his own body, sin against Potiphar's wife, sin against Potiphar, and most importantly, sin against God. Verse 9. So Joseph resisted and fled in the strength of the Lord. A lot more we could say here on background, but let's move now to our doctrinal or teaching points from this section of Genesis 39. Doctrinal point number 1. The Bible does not teach situation ethics. The Bible does not teach situation ethics. Situation ethics teaches that you always do the most helpful or the most loving thing from your perspective in any given situation. Now, if ever God wanted to teach situation ethics, the Joseph story would be the perfect place. I mean, here's Joseph, away from home, with seemingly no chance for marriage. He's in his late 20s now. And as a man, Joseph had certain needs. And these needs were God-given. God created us with sexual drive. And then there was Potiphar's wife. Apparently she was involved in an unhappy marriage, and she had certain needs. Why not go ahead? Wouldn't that be the loving thing to do? No one would know, and no one would get hurt. Certainly it wasn't sin if it was two consenting adults, especially if Joseph was just taking orders from Potiphar's wife, who owned him as a slave. Why, this might even be a way to get out of slavery and get back home to his father. I mean, if he didn't consent, he might be thrown into prison. Certainly the most helpful and most loving action to take in this situation would be to go ahead and consent, right? Wrong. The Bible does not teach situation ethics. This would be sin regardless of the situation. Joseph had the right view. He lived by biblical ethics. Now, what about us? You see, situation ethics appeals to human reasoning. Sometimes it seems that the most helpful thing to do, the most loving thing to do, is to go against God's standards. Oh, not all the time, of course. Just in certain situations, when there are extenuating circumstances. Don't fall for that snare of Satan. Obeying God and keeping his standards is always the most helpful and the most loving thing to do in all situations. Adultery is never right. Fornication is never right. Immorality is never right. The Bible does not teach situation ethics. Doctrinal point number two. The Bible does teach situation testing. The Bible does teach situation testing. God allowed Joseph to be in this situation of temptation. Joseph was being tested. Listen to the words of Psalm 105, verses 16 through 19. This is in reference to Joseph. Moreover, God called for a famine in the land. He destroyed all the provision of bread. He sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They hurt his feet with fetters. He was laid in irons until the time that the word came to pass, the word of the Lord tested him. Note, the word of the Lord tested Joseph through all of these circumstances. God allowed these things. It was a test of Joseph's faith. To be tempted is not sin. Our Lord was tempted. It's when you yield to temptation. That's sin. God is not the author of temptation. Read James chapter 1 in that connection, particularly verse 13. God is not the author of temptation, but God allows temptation to come to us as a test of our faith and as a test of our faithfulness. So we can be sure that as believers, we will be put in situations where we will be tested, maybe in the same area as Joseph here. You know, a number of years ago, I was standing in the lobby of a large hotel, and a nice-looking woman came up to me, and she said, Sir, do you have the time? When I looked up from my watch, she had put her fingers under the lapel of my jacket and said, how would you like to go to my room and discuss the time? It's interesting, I got everybody to look up on this illustration for some reason. Well, listen, guess what biblical passage just flashed through my mind at that point? You guessed it, Genesis 39. So I instinctively grabbed my coat and I walked away. When I told Margie about this later, she said, well, I'm sure glad you got away with your expensive jacket there. Well, I'm sure many of you could share experiences where God has put you in situations where he's allowed you to be tested in all kinds of areas. James 1 says that we are strengthened spiritually as well as rewarded when we pass the tests. So remember, the Bible does not teach situation ethics, but it does teach situation testing. Two quick practical applications, all right? Practical application number one. It's better to flee than to fall. It's better to flee than to fall. Joseph did the right thing and fled, even though it meant losing his coat. This is the way we're to resist temptation in this area. 2 Timothy 2:22 says that we are to flee youthful lusts. 1 Corinthians 6:18 says that we are to flee fornication. You see, sexual temptation is such a powerful weapon in Satan's arsenal because it appeals to a natural God-given desire. But you see, it's out of the bounds that God has defined as his standards. Many Christian leaders have fallen in this area because they did not flee the situation. Well, they may have started to flee, but then they stopped and the temptation caught up with them. We need to pray for our Christian leaders. Pray that they will flee any compromising situation. And this applies to all of us. We need to flee these kinds of situations, whether it be in the area of sex or any area of fleshly desire. The biblical principle of doing battle here is to flee. No matter how strong you feel or how mature you are, flee. The biblical way to resist temptation in this area is to flee. Don't even hang around to witness. Notice Joseph didn't say, well, let's sit down. I'll explain the gospel to you or something like that. No, you flee. And I want you to notice that Joseph began to practice this principle even before the event where she grabbed his coat. Look at verse 10. So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. He avoided her. Sexual sin is not irresistible. Avoid and flee. That's the biblical way. It's better to flee than to fall. Practical application number 2. Maybe we should thank the Lord that we're ugly. You like that one? Maybe we should thank the Lord that we're ugly. Now, as I look around this audience this morning, I only see one or two. No, I'm sorry. Only kidding. You're all good looking here this morning. But just in case you think that God has not blessed you with the greatest form and features package, remember this practical application. Maybe we should thank the Lord that we're ugly. Notice the end of verse 6. And Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. I can assure you that Potiphar's wife would not have tried to seduce an ugly Joseph. Agreed? I think you see the lesson. So if you think you're ugly, well, thank the Lord. Seriously speaking, you see, there's a built-in vulnerability and responsibility that goes along with good looks and talent. If you have been blessed with good looks, blessed with good talent, well, thank the Lord for these blessings. But recognize that you have a responsibility to use these blessings for the glory of God. And recognize that you will definitely be tested in these areas. Well, you know, the good news here is that we don't have to fail. God says in 1 Corinthians 10:13 that he gives the means to pass every test and resist every temptation. There's no need to fail. And the other good news, of course, is that when we do fail, and maybe there's been some failures here, God does pick up the pieces. But having said all that, when we think it through, and when we think of all the bad fallout that comes with failure, and how prone we are to fail, then maybe, just maybe, we should thank the Lord that we're ugly.